At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday, and that means it's time for the Wrestling Inc. Monday Night Raw after show, and have we got a show for you. The Wyatt Six rule the streets of Calgary. Jey Uso is on a collision course with Braun Breaker, and Gunther's favorite wrestler of all time is Bill Goldberg. But before we get into all of that, allow me to introduce the crew. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by Emily May and Justin Labar. Justin, I got to go to you first because this is a day that I look forward to across the year now. We get to compare our first week of fantasy football. How'd your team do? I got the dub.
You're going to love this, Jack. I should have lost. Everybody underperformed. Puka Nacua got hurt for me. Derrick Henry underperformed. The best performance I had on my offense was 20 or on my team was a defense, 25 points that I didn't even draft. I picked up the Vikings defense from the free agency market because I saw they're playing the Giants. I should have lost. The only reason I'm going to win is because my opponent started Christian McCaffrey, and about an hour before Monday Night Football, they said he's not playing. So I stole a victory, hook by crook, 1-0. Woo!
They don't remember how you got there. They just remember that you won.
That's it.
I love it. I have Derrick Henry too, and I was also disappointed with Mr. Henry's performance, but I got the win. Cooper Kupp saved me in the final hours there, so happy for him to do so well. Emily May, we always chat fantasy football to start things off this time of year. Do you have a fantasy football team, and did they win?
No, I do not have a fantasy football team, but I'm rooting for you both to hopefully do well. And then maybe you both are in the playoffs and you have to face each other. I want to see that happen.
Well, that's the best thing. We're not even in the same league.
Then there you go.
Well, we just compete against each other on this podcast.
Right.
Oh, okay. See? Well, then you guys can battle it out every week.
Root for Jack. He needs it more than I do right now.
I know, Jack. I'll root for you. I'll be on your team because I gave you a hard time with the hair after the pay-per-view on Saturday, and you have no air conditioning. So I'll be on your team, Jack.
I've been going through it, everyone. First off, for anyone who wasn't here for our after AEW All Out show, the chat, everyone turned on me and all started saying, Emily has the best hair. My heart was broken.
You cried.
Decided to turn up the temperature 1,000 degrees and turn off the air. Listen, everyone, I do not deal well with discomfort. I need a nice 80 degrees with a cool breeze coming through. That's what I like.
Okay, Jack, and you're Jack, being a little diva, but that's okay. Yeah. We'll handle it.
Jack, first off, you do the Wrestling podcast. You're a very good and successful DJ. You can afford a fan. Go plug one in and turn it on high. It will not disrupt. Secondly, You've been doing podcasts with me, with Corderas, with Flobo. And while we're pleasant company, if you get upgraded to have an Emily May on here, you can't blame them for taking her on a better visual of hair or anything else. So just roll with the punches here, okay?
Listen, I try to set up the people I host with, Justin, you make a good point, so that I, by default, can have the hair for the podcast. But now the our overlords at Wrestling Inc. Tower have put me in this position.
See what happens when you do Mondays with me and Corderis? You get the hair in a runaway. And now you get a little bit of challenge and you're backpedaling.
The Wrestling Inc. Tower, you're going to have to put in a call, Jack, because I think we got to rearrange the hosts, because I get it. I understand you want the best hair, you know?
I don't like discomfort. Two, I don't like competition. I like easy street. Can't I just have easy street? Why is life got to be mildly inconvenient? I can't stand it, guys. Speaking of inconvenience and discomfort, there was a lot of discomfort at AEW All Out this weekend. If you haven't had a chance to see it, make sure to check out Emily and I's review of everything that happened. But Justin, I know you covered it as well over at Busted Open Radio with your show. Any thoughts on All Out? We didn't get to hear from you yet.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining show. I mean, you know, you pay your money to watch it. You got your money's worth of entertainment. They were high intensity. There was not a first gear. It was pretty much in fourth gear or fifth gear, depending on your vehicle, the whole way. You know, I always talk about pro wrestling is an ice cream shop. It has a lot of flavors. You have your chocolate and your vanilla that is your top seller, and that is maybe your most traditional, maybe things, a way of doing things, but you have a lot of other flavors for other audiences. And I think you have to kind of keep that in mind. They gave you a lot of blood, a lot of violence. You know, personally to me, there was times where I thought, okay, especially with what you're gonna end on with the lights out, maybe not have as much blood and such prior, just to put more emphasis and importance on the main event. But again, that's all Monday morning quarterbacking. It was very entertaining. Every guy and girl busted their ass. The women's match that I thought was probably on most people's card, probably the one that was in the shadow of things, to me stood out the most, and that being Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. I thought it was for a night that was very physical anyways, up and down the card, somehow they managed to have their violence stand out. And again, when you're going up side by side to a Mercedes Moné versus Hikaru Shida title match, you'd think, okay, that's a tough card to draw, and that would be tough to try to stand out in the women's division. But I personally think they outshined the title match. That's just me. And then, you know, with the very talked about controversial lights out match, I'm a grown man. I'm not going to be offended by pro wrestling. I'm not offended by the match. I think that some of the spots they did with the level of violence they did, I thought there were some that should have gone away. Again, only to then emphasize other ones. For example, you know, taking the staple gun, stapling the pictures of Swerve's childhood. That has a lot of context and gravitas, given if you're following the story. Keep that in there. But maybe there's some other ones that just were just shock value for shock value to take out. You know, things like that. But, you know, I can get into a whole philosophical conversation about, you know, pro wrestling is supposed to be working, which the work is to make it look like you're hurting each other but not actually hurt each other, but that's probably a whole other podcast. But all in all, very entertaining. I did not go to sleep Saturday evening bored from what I just watched.
Yeah, I enjoy it. And we'll get into Raw, but I did love the show. The one thing, Justin, I think you should know, after all the violence, like, I think this is something we're watching this, you're right, the needle to the face, cinder blocks, I mean, all this, the staple gun staple gun, all this stuff happened. We're all disgusted by it. Emily on the show says she wanted fire. She's like, where was the fire? So yeah, she looks like this well, nice person, just well, so you know.
Well, Jack, first of all, to give me a little bit more, to give everyone a little bit more context, if they didn't watch the after show.
We don't do context on here, Emily.
No. I'm just saying, because they had that huge segment with Swerve's house being caught on fire, I thought they would have a segment with fire. Would make sense.
Emily, I agree. But that kind of leans back to my point. I agree with them.
You are psychopaths.
No. But here's what I'm saying. Get rid of the hypodermic needle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the cinder block was brutal. It was not a working cinder block. That was a legit cinder block. Like, there's some spots that they could have done away with, again, to emphasize the spots that they kept. And aside from the staple gun and the pictures, as I mentioned, I agree with them. The fire, that go-home ending of Dynamite was very well done. Mm-hmm. And so it would have been very sick and poetic to have fire been what was the final spot you know, in the match. So I agree. I think there's things like that that, you know, you can have argument over the psychology of a barbaric match like that.
Well, everyone in the chat seems to agree with you guys. You're all a bunch of psychopaths. But make sure to check out Busted Open Radio. Also check out the Wrestling Inc. review. Good stuff there. We got some news to chat about before we get into this show. Some news about former AEW and WWE star Matt Hardy has some things cooking. On the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, Hardy said something that we've been working on very heavily, which we did a lot this week, is a reality show for House Hardy. And that's something that we've talked to some pretty important people about. Emily, what are your thoughts on the Hardy Boys and them maybe having a reality show? Would you be interested in seeing these guys in their daily lives?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think they kind of would be perfect for a reality show, because I feel like a reality show is you know, you get an in-depth behind-the-scenes look. You kind of have some chaos and drama. And I think they're kind of the perfect subjects for it, for sure.
Justin, do you think is now the right time for a Hardy reality show? Do you think that this is still going to have interest? Do you think it's past its time, or do you think this is the perfect timing for something like this?
I can see a little bit of everything to answer that. On the one hand, obviously Matt and his family, what I mean by his family, not just talking about his brother, but about his wife, about his father-in-law, even his, who now is his oldest kids, I'll just say his first kids, they were very much more in the public spotlight, 7, 8, 9 years ago, especially when the broken stuff was just starting, when he was in his TNA days and what have you. So, then would have been interesting. But also when you have, you know, an infant, you know, maybe how great is that necessarily to do? So, you know, now it works in the sense of his kids are getting older, again, at least his older kids. He's at a very interesting point in his career where, you know, certainly he's got fewer days ahead of him in the ring. You know, kind of feels like he's doing some fun stuff with Impact. It kind of feels like you can sense one more something with WWE, even if it's just as simple as Hall of Fame for he and Jeff. So it's a very interesting, you know, winding down a very good 30-year career. So in that way, the timing works. I've gotten to spend a lot of time around Matt over the years. Love the guy. I got to do some independent wrestling loops with him. He's very funny. He's a very funny person. All of his family, everybody of his family that I've met, even Jeff, who has a different personality, has a nice, it's a likable sarcasm to his humor. So yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see where this goes. And I do think, speaking a little real here for a minute, obviously Jeff, you know, has gone through what he's gone through. This could be a good thing to peel the curtain back a little bit and get to see. I mean, Jeff's always been the more private of the two. So I guess if spun in the right PR way, this could be a good thing. But that is one very real factor that I would toss out there is this just Matt on his part of the compound and, and just his immediate family, or do we bring Jeff into it as well?
Yeah. I think that that's great, because I think it's good to keep him busy. Kind of what Tuck is saying, Tuck Graff in the chat saying, keep the Hardys busy, idle minds. I think it's good to have you be busy with something. I think these are kind of guys that are always going to be working on something anyways. I imagine when they're 80, they're going to be working on some kind of project, but I'm kind of excited for it. If this was a lot of other wrestlers, I'd feel like, I don't know, maybe you've missed the boat on the opportunity, but the Hardy Boys are so creative. I have a feeling that they'll find a way to make it interesting. They just know how to get into that, tap into that interesting factor. I mean, you look at Jeff Hardy, as you mentioned, one of the most creative people in pro wrestling history, probably. And Matt Hardy with the broken Matt stuff, they know how to tap into this stuff. So I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And like, to both of your points, I think, like, how far will this go? Like, how deep is it going to go? Because I think what fascinates wrestling fans about them is, like, they just have such a connection to each other, obviously, but also, like, what makes them and they're special. But they also they're also very relatable. They have their own struggles. They have their own history, their own past. And so what stories are they going to tell? Like, what makes sense? And then what are they comfortable with? I think that's also a question too. Like, how much are they going to share?
Well, and it'd also be interesting with them. This would not just be This would not just be a series, a reality show where you're just seeing them in airports and backstage wrestling. Like, it's a shoot that the huge Hardy compound. It is a huge property in North Carolina. Matt has his house. Jeff is on another side. And then their father, that is like, it is literally their big piece of land. And Matt has got his big game room and gym that is decked out in the Matt Hardy colors. And he's got like all the different, you know, staples that we've seen of the different matches they've done, cinematic matches they've done. So it is kind of cool. Like, you can literally hunker down and just get within the gates of the compound and you just can roam free of this family that is just, I mean, that's a very cool setting. That's not a, you know, it's basically like what old fashioned MTV Real World would do, but rather they had to like corral everybody into a big house. This is just, you have the wrestling family on this big piece of property and they have their own wrestling rings there. You know, they have all that stuff.
Right. And yeah, so I think it'll be cool. I'm excited to hear more about it. I don't know how close it is to actually being released, but I think it'll be exciting. Everyone in the chat, everyone in the comments, let me know if you'd be interested in seeing this reality TV program. But someone who's signed some contracts with a program, Shayna Baszler, as reported by Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful Select has recently signed a multi-year deal with the company as well. PW Insider is now reported that Sheamus could be in line to follow Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre in signing a new contract with the company. According to the report, Sheamus's new deal has either been completed or is about to be, with an internal perception in WWE that he will be with the company for at least another 3 to 5 years. Emily, I feel like both these signings are kind of no-brainers. Of course, they're going to happen, but also, just good to lock him up. Thoughts on Sheamus and Shayna Baszler?
Exactly. I mean, I think it makes sense. Like, you always go through the contract negotiations. And again, at this point in the wrestling world and industry, anything's possible, right? So you're never sure, right? So I'm glad they locked these two in. And, you know, obviously we see Shayna in the new faction and Sheamus obviously building new feuds and rivalries. So, you know, it's great that they got locked in.
Yeah, Justin, these are two people. You can tell that they are well-loved at WWE because Shayna Baszler getting to go do things like Bloodsport and them being totally cool with it. Sheamus, obviously, I would have been flabbergasted if they let him walk away. But at the same time, re-signing a star is still good news.
Definitely it's good news. You know, God, if you would have told me in 2019 that Shayna Baszler was going to have longer, more years and more contracts and more years at WWE than Ronda Rousey, I would have told you you're crazy. But Shayna's here to stay. Good for her. She's somebody who obviously did MMA first. Relatively speaking, she was much older by the time she really made her footing in pro wrestling. Again, I say that relatively speaking to how normally the timeline is, but she's done really well for herself. And by all accounts, from what I've heard, she's very well liked in the company. So good on her to get paid and get rewarded for that. And then, yeah, Sheamus, I mean, I think, you know, WWE more than ever now, as we've seen the last few years, not just with the locations of events, but just the talent roster up and down, they are more international than ever. You know, so I think when you have somebody like Sheamus, a big Irish superstar who obviously hit, you know, was a surefire Hall of Famer with his WWE resume. You want to lock that up. You don't want to, because I mean, yeah, you let him go. Any other company would pick him up, whether or not they are going to, you know, ask him to work full time or whatever. But you don't want to see a guy that's done all that he's done show up in any other company that's competing against you if you don't have to, especially when, again, if you say, okay, if you have a conversation with Sheamus and he thinks, okay, I got 3 or 5 more years, even if it means on a part time schedule, I got 3 to 5 more years I can offer and give you physically. And then after that, let's have the next conversation be, okay, my active talent contract's done, but as they are expanding the performance centers and they're expanding their entire global footprint, hey, would you like to be a trainer somewhere? Hey, would you like to be a coordinating producer somewhere? Like, would you just like to be on the Legends deal and be an ambassador? Like, there's so many opportunities. And then you have NIL. There's so many opportunities for these veterans to be of use to the company in other ways other than just being, you know, inside the ring. So, you know, but if you let somebody like him go now when he feels he still has a little bit more to offer you, well, one, you risk another company scooping him up and locking him down long term. You also risk just, you know, maybe burning a bridge and making them feel slighted, making them feel disrespected after a 15-year run of giving to the company through some low times. Let's be honest. You know, when Sheamus broke in and was, you know, it wasn't exactly like business was a booming at the time. So I think these are both great, great signings. Of course, I'm always happy to see anybody get paid.
Sheamus is one of those guys that always makes me feel old because I feel like he's still the new guy that came in and just beat John Cena and shocked the world. Like, wow. Like, but now he's the veteran that's getting another contract probably to end his career with WWE. That's wild to me. Shayna Baszler, I was such a big fan of her NXT run. I think I'm always going to be a supporter of her no matter what booking she's in, no matter what happens. I'm just gonna be like, Shayna Baszler is awesome. Cause I remember when she was, you know, nap, tap, or snap for so long. So really cool to see that. And there's going to be more opportunities for a lot of these people because it sounds like, or it's being reported anyways, by WrestleVotes on X that WWE are preparing to announce a new primetime TV special coming to NBC this December with a date and location still yet to be revealed. Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter has since been told by WWE sources that the NBC show will, in fact, be the return of Saturday night's main event. Emily, I see you shaking your head there. Are you excited about this?
Yeah, I'm so excited. This is one of those, like, WWE is literally taking over every network. You're going to get, like, NBC is a huge get. Being on Netflix, like this is a huge deal. And we heard, you know, Triple H previously talk about how they're going to expand their pay-per-views. They're going to have even more premium live events. Apologies. And then now we got this a huge announcement. So, and I think this is going to be like a throwback. It's going to have some of the legends that we love that maybe can't do a full run, but they can have an appearance. I really want it to be nostalgic. I want it to feel like a throwback show that they're on. If it's a primetime special, it can honor some of those legends that, you know, we want to see back, have some surprises, things like that.
I've always felt, Justin, that with wrestling, we always talk about bringing in new audiences. NBC is such a big channel in so many households. Obviously, as a wrestling fan, I'm like, I love the throwback. I love Saturday Night Main Event. This is very cool as an old school wrestling fan, but this is going to be great for WWE, which is on fire right now, as Triple H says. I mean, this is great.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it is fantastic timing because obviously, you know, I think it was maybe like 05. 06 this 07 ish they did bring back, and we had a few Saturday Night's Main Events in that time period, which was fun, but it is a whole different ball game now with WWE and the industry in general. So it's, and you know, Emily alluded to it, it is, even though more and more people are cutting the cord every day and the traditional linear television is, you know, slowly disappearing, being on over the air network like NBC or CBS, or it's still, you still have access to more eyes and more homes than anything else. And the weight that's behind a network like an NBC, you know, that has the Today Show in the morning, that has the NBC Nightly News, that has Sunday Night Football, which has overtaken Monday Night Football, all the synergy that can go, that where if you're taking a Saturday and you're putting a, you know, and obviously, you know, they're going to roll out big names. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, as Emily alluded to, Stone Colds or any, you know, Rock, any kind of, you know, big name that has that, packs that punch. And with the momentum that they have right now, and that's going to be just a few weeks before they go to Netflix, like WWE is more mainstream and cool than they've ever been. And obviously I lived through the Attitude Era. That was a different, even that was niche by comparison of today and what they do with the belts for every single sports team that wins and the amount of celebrities that now will cross over and do things with them. Bad Bunny, Logan Paul, you know, it's a whole different ball game. So, and it'd be fun to see, like I'm saying, like Saturday Night's Main Event, for those who, you know, forgotten or didn't see it, like the whole philosophy is they would flip a wrestling show on its head rather than building to the main event last, because the show was starting at 10 o'clock or whatever it was, they would put the main event up front. And then as the night went on, you'd actually kind of move more down to your mid card and low. Like, so is that the strategy they take? You know, is that what they think applies now to a 2024 crowd? It'll be very interesting to see how they take approach. But Triple H has shown in his creative era, you know, he's brought back Bad Blood. He's brought back, you know, War Games. He's brought back a lot of things from the past, and they brought back things from the past and put a very relevant modern touch on it, I have no reason to think that he won't hit a home run with this too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is going to be like their big kind of go home special before they move on to Netflix. And I hope, like, depending on how it goes, I hope it's an annual thing, because I like how they're doing like Bad Blood. They're bringing back these live events that we all remember, right? And that we all have like an affinity to. And so, but they're hopefully infusing new talent as well as legends into it. So you're bringing an old audience and a new audience together. You're merging it, like you said, Justin, for this new era that we're seeing, this new creative era.
Well, and there's no, it fits too in December because there's no PLE on the schedule.
Yeah, there isn't. So this is, we haven't really had a premium live event in December. It's always been Survivor Series in November.
Yeah, so this is something I say with Triple H right now too, in this new era that we're in. They have earned a lot of credit. So they very rarely waste your time with a show. And so this is going to be something that, as wrestling fans, I think we're all going to want to tune in to see. But yeah, and to your point, Justin, now even the people that they can bring on are more recognizable and more relevant to the broader spectrum. Obviously, The Rock was a big deal back in the day. Stone Cold was a big deal back in the day. But now The Rock is a bigger deal across the world. And if you had The Rock come on a Saturday Night event, or even a Batista come back, or a John Cena come back, they're on different levels.
If the Cena farewell tour kicks off there.
Huge. Like that, yeah. People will tune in for that. People tune in outside of wrestling would say, oh, John Cena's on that, Peacemaker is on, that's a big deal. But something else that they're doing that's kind of bringing things back that I think a lot of people are excited for, 2-hour Raw starting October 7th. I almost felt like when they announced this at first, it almost felt like someone was messing with me, because Joe, just real quickly on commentary, it's like, yeah, and then we're gonna be doing 2-hour Raws starting in October, and I was like, wait, what? Did he say what I thought he said? I'm by myself, like looking at. Did you hear this? I'm going to Twitter. Like, did anyone else hear this? And I felt like there was a gap before anyone really responded, and then eventually all the news site posted it. But Justin, we have been waiting for this forever. 2-hour Raws. How exciting. I am so ready. I feel like, why wait? Let's just do the 2-hour Raws now.
Well, I agree. And with tonight being the season premiere, you'd think that'd be fitting. But the real reason being that their actual contract, the current contract that they're wrapping up with USA, still goes through the remainder of September and the very beginning of October. And it does have them contractually obligated to do 3 hours. So. I can remember the day 15 years, I think it was 15 years ago, where John Cena had Twitter was like a brand new thing. They had John Cena like announce that Raw was moving to 3 hours permanently. Cause if you remember, Raw used to like, they would like dabble in like, it's a super show, it's 3 hour, like, but then they finally went there to that permanently. And then we've all lived with that. And, the third hour is usually the worst viewership for them. A weekly show should be 2 hours. And this is nice because it's going to be a hard 2 hours for the remaining 3 months that they have on USA. Mm-hmm. And then when they go to Netflix, look, they're not taking an hour of content away for 3 months and then going all of a sudden an hour back. When they go to Netflix, it'll be a soft ending. Maybe some weeks will be 2 hours and 5 minutes. Maybe some weeks will be 2 hours and 20 minutes. Maybe 1 week's an hour and 55. It'll be whatever kind of fits the format of what they want to get done. And that's the way it should be. And that's what's going to be so fascinating about getting off of, again, linear TV, where you have a hard out and you can be on Netflix, where, you can kind of make your own rules in terms of, the Rock's here tonight. All right, we're going 2 hours and 45. Right. So this is so exciting. And I know some fans, I've seen some fans, like I posted a tweet happy about this. And some fans were like, they didn't get it. They're like, why would you be excited about them taking an hour of content away from you? First off, sometimes less is more. Sometimes give me your best 2 hours and some people that didn't make it on the card, that's okay. Or they'll make it on the card next week, or it'll make the PLEs better, or it'll make you have more better advertised main events for Raw because you have more stuff to give there. Also, selfishly, we stay up. I'm on the East Coast. I know you you two are Central and West. When you stay up, then that's just the later my night is. I kind of like the fact that it's going to be done a little earlier and we can get this stuff rolling. So it's a win all the way around.
Yeah. I mean, Justin, to your point, like sometimes a 10 to 12 minute match is better than a 20 to 30 minute match. Like
with
commercials. Yeah. I mean, you can be succinct in a short amount of time, and it's going to challenge writers. It might be better for sponsors and things like that, and advertising dollars. So I think they're obviously testing, I think, for that Netflix crowd as they transition over. But I think it's better. 2 hours, it's tight, it's short. I'm ready for it.
I'll tell you what, I went and saw Beetlejuice this weekend. Uh-oh, I said it three times.
Oh, no.
I went and saw the movie because, one, I was a Beetlejuice fan, so I wanted to see the movie. But two, hour 45. Even movies, I don't want you over 2 hours. I don't want to do anything for over 2 hours. Football, I give you a pass because that's you only get it a few weeks a year. It's you get very little compared
even
to pro
football,
wrestling.
Though they're speeding it up. They're trying to
They're speeding up baseball too with the new pitching clock.
Which has been great. It's been tremendous.
I mean, 2 hours, anything over 2 hours is tough for anything. And so I love that it's gonna be 2 hours, all killer, no filler. I'm so excited for it. I mean, I am bummed some people may not get TV time that used to, but it's going to be a better show overall. And there's a lot of programming. I'm sure they'll find a place.
I don't think it's going to hurt as much talent as people are thinking. I think, as Emily mentioned, if you shorten the matches, and let's be honest, again, a week-to-week show, unless it is the big main event that's being built to, week-to-week, shorter matches is a better thing, not just because you don't want to have the commercials in between, but it then puts more value on the longer match, the longer story at the PLE. Also, we don't know, once we get to Netflix especially, we don't know what the format situation is going to be as it pertains to commercials and ads. Mm-hmm. If Netflix says you pull up Raw live or archived and we're going to give you 3 minutes of ads that you got to watch and then we'll drop you into live action after that. If that's like I don't know this for sure. I'm just speculating. But if it's something like that, and then after that, the only breaks in between segments are what WWE manufactures, meaning, let's show a WWE shop package or let's show a feud package between Rhea and Liv. If all of a sudden they take commercials out of it, then that's a huge reduction that you have now of time they have to allocate again to breaks, and you can still get talent featured. So I don't think it's gonna be as harmful as some people think when they reduce an hour for Raw.
Also, I know a lot of people don't watch the speed matches, but those matches are still pretty solid, and they're literally 3 minutes long. So I think they'll be fine, even if they have to do some stuff like that.
I'm waiting for a TikTok world champion. I'm waiting for them to put on a 15-second TikTok match.
It's going
to
be Jack Farmer.
That's basically what the speed championship is.
Well, it's 3 minutes now. It's going to keep. You just wait.
It's going to be like 30-second TikTok champion.
I actually agree. I think the TikTok wrestling shows are going to become a thing.
See, my entire life, I was trying to say I could be a champion in 30 seconds and nobody would believe me. No. Nobody.
You could do it. I believe in you.
You were ahead of your time.
I was. tell that to my college girlfriend. I was trying to say, it's just.
yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jack Farm with the Wrestling Podcast, and a few years back, WWE sold a New Day-themed kit where people could make unicorn horn-shaped popsicles. They don't make them anymore, but you can still make your own popsicles, even without the kit, and get top-tier hydration in the process. In these post-SummerSlam dog days, Liquid IV is offering refreshing summer flavors like Popsicle Firecracker and Rainbow Sherbet to keep you cool and give you 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Liquid IV is always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. It's great for a road trip to No Mercy or watching All In at home. Indulge in hydration this summer with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code WRESTLE at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WRESTLE at liquidiv.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Well, we have a lot of show to talk about. We're going to get into it. As always, like, comment, share, subscribe, five-star review on Apple Podcasts, or I guess anywhere where you can put a five-star review, not just Apple Podcasts. But everyone in the chat, whether you're Nick or Mike Martin, Stephen Camp, Ethan Cruz, Danny, GMO, TLD, a lot of folks. I can't get y'all. John Johnson lurking. Always good to see you. No way, Mr. X. You don't come through all the time, Mr. X. You got to come through more. Jerome the Choice, Maria, Jane Young, and Richard, everyone coming through. So many of you. I wish I could call you all out, but we got to get to the show eventually. There's too many of you. I guess that's a good thing, though. But also, if you're a lurker hanging out, shout out to you as well. Just like, comment, share, subscribe. Let's talk about this show. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw. Main event time. Braun Strowman, Jey Uso, Ilya Dragunov, Pete Dunne, number one contendership for the IC title on the line. Strowman and, or I should say, Breaker has run-ins with everybody before the matchup happens. It's a fun one that really goes off when Bronson Reed squashes Strowman like a little bug on the announce table. Eventually, Jey Uso gets the win. Emily May. First main event. What'd you think of this one?
I mean, okay, Jey Uso is so fun, and I think everyone was kind of rooting for him for this one, because we want him to have the championship. We want him to have that singles run. He's so popular right now. He's spending like 12 minutes after the show goes off the air just doing yeet for the crowd. Like, it's just so fun. But I do have to say, Jack, that was my favorite moment in the match, was when Bronson Reed just like threw himself at the announcer's table. It broke the, you could hear the crowd go wild. I jumped up and was screaming. Like, it really just like, it moved everything forward in that match. But I think that was like my favorite moment of this main event.
I popped like crazy, and old Joe Tess on commentary. He was been doing great, but when that so moment good. Happened, I was like, Joe's got it. He nailed the emotion, the way he reacted. I was like, oh, Joe Tess, you're gonna be around for as long as you want to be, man. You absolutely crushed that. Justin, your thoughts on this one? I know you're a big Bronson Reed guy, so I want to hear you gush over this guy crushing everybody.
No, it was a great moment. It was a great visual. You know, the crowd reacted to it. I mean, it looks, I would assume we're building to something with Bronson and Braun for bad blood. Given the spots they've done already on the build, I can't imagine what they're drumming up for the big, you know, big moment.
Blocks.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it'll be. No, it was an entertaining match. I mean, obviously, look at this. You know, because Braun Strowman had what he's had going on with Bronson, I kind of took him out of this. Pete Dunne, he's, again, got what he's got going on with Sheamus. I kind of scratched him off. So then you come down to Jey Uso and Dragunov, and it's like, you know, would I see a Dragunov versus Braun Breaker match? Yeah, but these PLEs are very sexy marquees. Even the what we used to refer to as the secondary PLEs events, like a Bad Blood or a Hell in a, or what, when they used to do a Hell in a Cell event every damn year. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you look, so between Dragunov and Jey Uso is the bigger name. So that's the one that the people want to see in the title match. It'll be interesting once we get to that, then start making predictions of, like, you know, Jey Uso is moving merch like crazy. That sometimes is a metric that's very important, and that can help sway the booking to say, hey, let's put the IC title on him. But also there's the other side of it of, like, well, he's moving merch this well, and he's just kind of just doing the yeet thing. Let's let Braun Breaker keep being built, because Braun's not doing anything wrong. Braun's having a very good run. Mm-hmm. But then again, if Jey doesn't, Jey once again hasn't got a singles title ever. He's comes up short again. So this will be fascinating to watch how they build this bad blood, how this all gets executed. I think Jey versus Braun, that's the best matchup. That's the sexiest marquee, but exactly how they build it and exactly what ends up transpiring come October 5th is going to be really wild to watch.
Everyone has something coming out of this too, which is great. As you mentioned, Braun Strowman, Bronson Reed, they clearly got unfinished business. Pete Dunne and Sheamus, I mean, Dragunov's kind of left out in the cold a little bit, but Jey Uso has already got that history with Braun Breaker, not history, but him talking about how your family's never beat my family. Also, I love Braun Breaker, man. I thought, okay, he's a great guy in matches, but him just not being bothered by anybody backstage, him not being bothered by Braun Strowman being 7 feet tall and 900 pounds, him not caring about Pete or whatever he wants to call himself. It just, there's something about him. He just has a confidence, Emily. Braun Breaker is quickly becoming one of my favorites.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I feel like once he became champion, this confidence was built where, like, he's now not afraid of anyone, which you do kind of have to have that as champion. Yeah, you have a target on your back. People are going to come after you, but you have to be ready to face anyone at any time. But I have noticed that he really has, like, fit into this mold of a champion and really has, like, solidified his confidence a little bit more. And I'm not sure where that's coming from, but I feel like it's helping to have these moments on Raw where he could, like, have those standoffs with people and show that he's not even wavering at all. And that's building to these premium live events so that he can have these big marquee matches, because that's what he's doing. He has to build these marquee matches to make a legacy for himself.
JT in the chat says he has that Big Papa Pump confidence. Holla if you hear me. We had a street fight. American Made versus the Wyatt Six. We got a cool video package. It's a train wreck with tables and kendo sticks and trash cans. Match boils down to Uncle Howdy getting involved and helping his team get the win. Justin, this one was we've called enough of these shows here. You know, this was my speed. This was my kind of matchup. Just anarchy, people flying everywhere. I loved this one. How did you feel?
Yeah, they needed a hot opener to kick off this commercial free hour one. Of course, they are combating the first week of Monday Night Football for the NFL. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing. first off, I was glad, you know, they're in Calgary, which, you know, great crowd. American Made comes out, and they're heels any which way, but they come out and just having the American flag too, just kind of extra you suck heat. And I had this moment and I was like, oh, if Vince was still booking this, there would be a reasonable chance the Wyatt Six would come out with a Canadian flag. Thank God that didn't happen.
Oh my God, you're right.
And then I tweeted the picture of the 1993 old school Undertaker where Vince made him open his jacket and he has the American flag inside for Team USA. Shit. So glad that didn't happen. Thank you, Triple H, for not making that happen. No, this was a very good... Here's the best compliment I want to give this match. Was the quality control. And what I mean by that is you have eight people out there fighting in a street fight. So they're in front of a live crowd. So they can't just, you know, they can't just be standing around. They did a very good job, obviously coordinating, rehearsing, communicating, whatever term you want to say. They did a very good job, quality control of every spot, every meaningful spot. And when I say meaningful spot, I basically anything that's beyond just a punch and a kick. So if it's, hey, I'm going to drop you on the announce table. Hey, I'm going to take a kendo stick and I'm going to hit you several times. Anything that was beyond a punch or a kick, they made sure that there was never two going on at the same time, overriding each other, making it very difficult for the camera people to get to move around and get to it. And then of course the director who has to actually switch to them. Unless you do a split screen or a four box or whatever, which WWE doesn't often do in matches. They did a really good job. Nothing overrode anything else, to the point of, if you go back and watch Raw, go back and watch when an important spot's happening. If you look in the background, you know, the other individuals are all paired off. Again, they're not standing around because they can't. They'll just do, again, some basic punch. They'll just do some busy work, some punch, kick, struggle in the corner until the camera comes around and it's their time. It was very well done to where everybody's stuff mattered. Nothing got lost in the shuffle. No spot was for nothing. So for me, as a TV person and knowing how difficult that can be to have an eight-person match going on, great job. And I love the unmasking that the White Six does. I love that we acknowledge that they're real people underneath. No, you know, they are mortal. And I think all in all, maybe the person that was the MVP of this, the best showing, was Nikki Cross, because she's the one of the White Six who has not had a match yet. She's also the one out of the White Six who She's had the most main roster exposure recently, at least. I'm not going to even go into the Bo Leaf stuff, but you know, I mean, she's had like superhero Nikki, and then she had was a Sanity crazy. Like, she's had a lot of stop and starts. So it would be very, I can see that being a tall task. And I think that she came off really strong, taking the mask off, still looking scary, good physicality. So I thought this was important for her to look good. I thought she did look good.
Yeah. Emily, I want your thoughts on this one. Was it violent? I know there was no fire, but was it still good enough for you? And also, I got to ask, something rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. Is the American Maid, they're the bad guys, but Wyatt's, they used the numbers game to get the win. They used an extra person to get the win. They cheated in a non-cheatable thing. What's up with that?
I mean, it's a street fight, Jack. Anything's possible. You know, there's no rules. You use, you know, kendo sticks. You use your, you know, numbers game. You use whatever you can to win.
Jack, what'd you do in your last street fight? Come on.
Yeah, come on, Jack. Well, you should know. I used fire. You should know that.
I defended the Tacoma Street Championship in my last just...
Emily is queen in the Texas streets, I've heard.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I've had some San Antonio street fights for sure.
Because he burns everybody.
Hey, it's a winning strategy, quite frankly.
It is, exactly. Everyone's afraid of me. I always have a lighter. I'm good to go. No, but to your question, Jack, I think it actually was like the perfect pacing of violence. It wasn't like what we saw this weekend, but it was a great way to really kind of kick off Raw in that first hour. I like how I finally felt like Wyatt Six had the cohesion, you know, where they kind of felt like they were a unit working together. And I feel like we've had all these amazing visual packages. We've had these really emotional packages. And now we finally got to see the mystical kind of energy behind them, and kind of creepy, but also like we're all connected. And I feel like this is going to be a pretty successful group working together.
By the way, Baby Ice clearly has followed my street fighting career, knows that Jack got the win by calling customer service. That's how I win my street fights. Justin, I got a question.
I mean, that's a strategy that keeps you from messing up your hair, so I guess.
It is, yeah. I call customer service, and I ask for the manager.
Please don't do that, Jack.
Who's your boss? Justin, I've got someone said this on Twitter. At WrestleBro91, I saw this and I want to ask you if they have a point. They tweeted, "I wish WWE would diversify its portfolio of weapons. Not saying we need syringes and staple guns, but honestly, what is with the kendo stick fetish? I do notice that hashtag WWE Raw, end of the tweet. I read that and I do notice it feels like every kind of match like this is kendo sticks and garbage cans every single time. Do you think WWE needs to freshen up these kind of matches, add something different, or is this how it should stay?"
No.
Fire.
Nope. I mean, you can
hairspray and lighter.
You can have like a wild card every now and again for, and again, this goes back to my off the top where I said philosophical ice cream shop flavors. AEW does things one way, and I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just, that's just the way they do it. But I, as somebody who's been in a few hardcore matches and dealt with some of the stuff, I appreciate the way WWE does things. And what I mean is, like, you know, first off, every town you go to, people chant, "We want tables." Breaking a table is not the most glamorous or crazy or painful spot, but it's over with people. It still is. So first off, you go with what works. Trash cans. Again, this is it's a television product. Trash cans are something everybody can relate to. Everybody's a trash can they have to take out to the curb every week. B, the trash cans that are used, they sound good. So when you hit them, it sounds painful. It sounds like, oh my God, somebody that just got hit with it or is inside of it sounds painful. Kendo sticks, they sound good. They actually hurt too, by the way.
They do hurt. Those hurt.
They hurt.
Let me tell you.
They hurt. I had a few whelps to prove that one. They hurt, but they also sound good. Anybody of any size can use them. So, no, I don't really think they have to dive. They don't really have to, you know, don't don't overthink this. They go with what works. And so, yeah, I'll stick with that. Again, occasionally, if you need a strap or you need handcuffs or if you need fire, occasionally go for a wild card of something. But what works is what works. The greatest hits are always what they come back for.
One of my favorite weapons I saw was actually at a Championship Wrestling from Hollywood match, and it was a bodega street fight, and someone used a pack of Oreos and they hit the other person with it. And I know that sounds funny, but it is. But the way when the bag pops open, it was so loud and the cookies flew everywhere.
It's such a mess.
Such a visual spectacle. It was like, it was the coolest thing. And I don't know how bad it hurt, but.
So I've seen, to follow the theme of street fight weapons, I've seen friendship bracelets and beads getting thrown, on, you know, all over the place. And then also shopping carts are a popular one.
Danny Cochran put me on blast here, says, Emily and Justin say kendo sticks hurt. Jack remains silent.
Well, on another,
I wouldn't know.
Here's an unsuspecting one from my own personal. So this is obviously a plastic bottle, but imagine this is a can. Imagine this is a can of anything. I mean, you know, beer is obviously what gets the most pop. But so if you take a can sideways and you hit somebody off the forehead, that can be a nice boom. The beer explodes, the liquid explodes, and it can have a good sound. But I mean, I'm not gonna say it, you know, there's contact. However, one time I got hit with the can head on, and the tab cut me right on the forehead. So the splash was everywhere, but I can't say it because they'll get mad at me, but it effing hurt. Like, so there's little.
Did you get an indent? Did you get an indent?
Yeah. I just make that point to say, like, there's little unsuspecting things that you're like, oh, it's a small, and like, it can have a big effect because it has a sound or has an explosion of liquid, but it also can screw up very easily if the person that does it doesn't do it right. So. Yeah.
Well, something that was done definitely right, but also really hurt, was Gunther having a conversation with Brett the Hitman Hart. Hitman talks about the pride of being a champion, and Gunther comes out and says he's the best now. Sami Zayn says, if you want to be the best, then defend the title against me. Gunther says no. Brett calls Gunther a coward, so Sami beats up Gunther. Justin, the news of the night. We should have talked about this at the very beginning. Rarely do we hear this. Gunther, his favorite wrestler of all time, Bill Goldberg. That is, for the record, the greatest line in the history of pro wrestling, Justin.
Let me ask both of you this.
Coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, let me ask both of you this. So, this was cool. And, you know, I was really excited to see how they're going to use Brett. I was really excited to see how they're going to use, you know, Legend. You know, he's not going to take any bumps or anything, but like, how are they going to further story? Last week when they announced it, I thought, okay, Punk's a big Brett fan. Maybe this is going to be something for Punk and Drew, but this makes total sense. Okay. But this was fun. So as Gunther is saying what he's saying about how you're my second favorite, my mind, just because it's how it's been trained for the last 25 years in pro wrestling, my mind immediately went to the cheap one, which was, oh, he's going to say my favorite wrestler is the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, and Canada would boo. Did you guys, did your minds go to that same place?
Exactly. I thought that at first. I was like, I even argued to myself, like, Shawn Michaels isn't a Gunther guy, though. He wouldn't like him. But yes, Justin, that was my exact thought.
Em, what about you?
I felt like there was going to be a swerve here. So okay. I wasn't really like, I didn't necessarily think that was going to happen. Now that I think about it, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But I kind of wasn't sure, because Gunther is like, kind of, you're not sure where he's going to go on the mic sometimes.
Yeah. I was 99% sure it was Shawn.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So as he's doing this, my mind quickly goes, he's going to say Shawn Michaels. And my mind goes, well, no, that's not going to work as well anymore, because we've seen Brett and Shawn reconcile. They made a DVD over it.
Yeah.
Shawn's really well liked because he's got NXT going strong. So my mind, real quick, I'm like, no, don't do this.
They wouldn't loop him in. Like, yeah.
And then he says Goldberg. I don't know about you guys. You know, in my normal day-to-day texting, I probably type the letters LOL for the emphasis to let somebody know that it's the context of the comment, but I'm not actually out loud.
Right.
To the point where my dog sat up looking at me like, why'd you just wake me up? Because it was so funny. That was tremendous.
I literally did one of those. Oh, I was so excited. It was so good. Emily, this was just a great example of just using a legend in a way that makes everyone around him look better and doesn't. It also wasn't, to be fair to some things we've seen in the past, it wasn't a super old guy beating up young people, you know, either. It was perfect.
Well, and it was like this perfect little moment where everyone got to kind of enjoy themselves and no one was going to really get majorly hurt. It wasn't, like you said, that stereotypical moment where you bring back a legend. Like, it was funny. It got everyone involved. And then, like, we obviously saw some moments later on as well, which we'll get to, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think it was really special. Like, and I think we're going to have more of this in this new era, especially with like Netflix. And I think having these legends come back each week, it's bringing, again, the old audience and new audience together again.
Jack, I'm going to go out on a limb on this new creative era that Goldberg's had his last WWE match.
I got a feeling. I got a
you
feeling.
You got a feeling? You think this is like the beginning of the road?
No, I think he's done in
the last WWE match.
Which is a shame.
And he's already in the Hall of Fame, so there's no need to call him back for that. So I don't know if he's going to come back around.
Yeah, it was just too bad because I am a big Goldberg fan. So I'm kind of bummed about that. But, you know, one thing I got to take away from this before we move on is when I do get to work in pro wrestling, I always call the wrestlers by their wrestler name. Sometimes they'll introduce themselves to me with their real, I use the wrestler name. And the reason is for what Gunther did. I don't know if you guys caught it. He called Wade Stu.
Yes.
And I was like, and I never wanted to accidentally do that. So I'm like, no. I'm going to only refer to you as what I'm supposed to say on air.
Do you know how many times I've done that, Jack, where I'm like either on air or like behind the scenes. And like, it's also when you're introducing someone as well to someone new and you're like using the wrong name and it gets messy.
Yeah. See, that's why the guys and girls I work with, I don't, unless I'm like super close, like unless I'm like gonna be like,
you just don't talk to them,
spending time outside of the event or maybe the after party, unless I'm gonna be like hanging out with you on like a Super Bowl or like a football Sunday at your house, like I don't want to know your real name, just let, because I don't want to blur that. This was especially confusing because he refers to Wade Barrett as Stu, which is his real name, but he's talking to Bret Hart, and when he said Stu, I went, Stu Hart? I'm like, Stu Hart, Bret's dad's been dead for Stu Hart beyond the grave, like no. And then I realized he was talking about Wade Barrett.
Tut Graf asks, do you guys have wrestler names? If not, you need to get on that. Yeah, I don't let anyone know my real name. But
you want it, Jack? You want to know my wrestler name?
What's your wrestler name?
Emily Mayhem.
There it is.
Oh, that's a good one. Everyone actually always thinks Jack Farmer is a fake name, so I just stick with it. Let's talk about the Judgment Day. As usual, they did quite a bit tonight. Finn Balor calls out Damian Priest. Damian and says, Finn didn't screw Damian. Damian screwed Damian. But Finn says, they both go back and forth. Finn's like, hey, you called me made me a sidekick. Damian wants the match, so they're going to have a match of Bad Blood. They go to have a sneak attack. Damian Priest's like, look, I wrote this playbook, but it didn't help him. He still, he wrote an airtight playbook because it worked flawlessly. This eventually leads to a Dominic Mysterio Dragon Lee match with Dominic winning and Finn Balor versus Rey Mysterio, with Finn Balor getting DQ'd, hurting Rey Mysterio's leg. So, Justin, again, kind of the through line of a lot of the show tonight, the Judgment Day, just kind of continuing what they're working on.
Yeah, continuing to build to Bad Blood, really good. This all kind of followed, what we kicked off with the Wyatt Six, so it was a good way to kind of, for the second half of the commercial free, because look, your hottest, one of your hottest is the love that people have for Rhea and for Priest and the disdain they have for Liv and Dom. So it made sense to put this in the first hour. I'm loving the build. I'm loving all that's going on. I definitely do fear that once Rhea gets her revenge on Liv at Bad Blood, which I assume would happen. I don't know if she's going to get 5 good minutes with Dom, but like between that and then like Priest and Finn, and then, you know, what exactly happens with the tag titles, which is part of Raw next week. I do have some concerns of like how much is left in the tank for Judgment Day 2.0.
Right.
You know, will it be a case of where like it kind of disbands and everybody gets, you know, a refresh? I don't know. And maybe that's good. I don't know. But that's my kind of concern is like Rhea's made, Dom's made, and Liv has been elevated definitely for this. Mm-hmm. Priest, to his credit, is a bigger star now than when he was as the world champion, which that's not often how that happens. Mm-hmm. So I think his next world title run, if he gets one, hopefully will be even bigger. But I do worry about Finn, JD. You know, Carlito's just kind of there for kicks, but I do worry about, especially Finn, most notably, what's going to be his long-term future.
Emily, we haven't chatted much about Judgment Day because this is our first time doing an episode of Raw together. But I have a question for you. At the end of this segment, right, the Judgment Day, they attack Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley. Jey Uso arrives. I got to ask you, was Jey Uso saving Damian and Rhea, or was Jey Uso just saving Rhea?
So I think he was just saving Rhea Ripley. I think it's going to unfold slowly. But there is something going on. She always hints on social media. They like have this chemistry thing going on. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but there's something going on. And so I think I think Damian Priest needs to be really careful. I think, like you said, Jack,
Priest need to be careful?
Because you don't know what's going to happen with Rhea Ripley and Jey Uso.
You think they're going to turn their back on Damian Priest, or you think Damian Priest maybe has eyes for Rhea Ripley?
Or no. I think maybe she's saying that maybe if Priest thinks that he's got an ally in Jey, he may not really have an ally in Jey. Jey's got his eyes on him.
Exactly. Like, you know, when you're like, oh, I'm going to rely on you as a friend, and then it's not a friend.
Damian Priest, like, hey, Jey, I got your back tonight, right? No, man.
Never know.
I'm not your friend.
I'm not saying I'm the best creative thinker here, Jack. I'm just saying what I observe.
It's like Priest, Rhea, and Jey all went bowling together.
Yeah.
Priest thinks all three of us are cool. We're going bowling together. And then they show up, and by the time Priest gets his shoes, Jay's whisked Rhea away, and they're on a different lane.
Or Jey and Rhea came with matching outfits, bags, and balls, and Priest is left out. And Priest is like, now I have no shoes, no ball, and no bag.
Okay, that's this a is bad bowling experience.
This is how it plays out. It starts out fine at first, but then Damian Priest, he bowls, and he gets a strike, and he goes, I got a strike. Isn't that great, guys? And he turns around and they're not even paying attention.
They're like making out of the snack.
Yeah. Bar. I feel like Jack, you're speaking from experience.
Not as the bowler. speaking of love, we have Drew McIntyre coming out, and he says that every time the fans chant CM Punk, it's in memory of.
Oh, then, so that's a good line.
Then he says to Wade, if you get between me and Punk again, I'm going to have some bad news for you. That's when Pierce comes out and says, not only is CM Punk not done, but if Bad Blood, it'll be hell in a cell. Emily, this is something I feel like we've all been kind of fantasy booking on Twitter for a while now. Are you okay with the fact that this felt a little predictable since it's something I think we clearly want, or did you want to be surprised?
I'm okay with it. Like, you're building to Bad Blood, like a Hell in a Cell match is like so fun. So I'm okay with it. Like, we've had so many surprises this episode and kind of leading into and announcements every week for some new things. I'm okay with that. I think they're going to build, like, we had the strap match. I loved how Adam Pearce came out and was like, here's the deal. We're going to put an end to this. And really, the only way to put an end to it is having a Hell in a Cell match. And it's like, that is like the epitome of the most gruesome, wild matches we've seen. Undertaker, Mankind. Like, this is, we're setting the bar with the history of this match. and the type of match it is. And the fact that it's at Bad Blood, like, it's going to be brutal and it's going to be one for the history books. So I'm okay that they're setting it up and we kind of, you know, knew or like kind of wished it into existence.
Yeah, I mean, you got Undertaker Mankind, you got Becky Banks, you've got Fiend Rollins, Justin, lots of classics. But I mean, this is when was the last time a Hell in a Cell match felt like it should be a Hell in a Cell match, if that makes sense? This is like gotta be the first one in a long time.
Yeah, that goes way back. I last time I saw Hell in a Cell was in Atlanta. I was in Atlanta. I don't remember what year it was, but it was the main event was CM Punk versus Ryback, and that's where he discovered Brad Maddox was a rogue referee. Oh, the great times.
You got to be careful. Those rogue referees. Yeah. You never know.
Right? Yeah, no, this has been a long time coming that we've had a Hell in a Cell match that, you know, Hell in a Cell truly is one of WWE's best blow-off stipulation matches. And, you know, again, I alluded to earlier in this episode, you know, when they got into the habit of Hell in a Cell being a annual pay-per-view, it was just like, oh, are you kidding me? We're gonna have to manufacture a feud to be in Hell in a Cell. It's pretty cool here. I mean, I think the date, October 5th, I think it's that is the actual date of October 5th, Bad Blood in 97, the famous Shawn and Taker one and Kane debut. I remember it fondly from St. Louis, so it's all pretty cool. This obviously fits. I mean, this feud more than any other feud fits the Bad Blood gimmick. Mm-hmm. I'm just a little bit fearful of, like, the strap match was really good, and it was the better match. The strap match was better than their SummerSlam match, and the strap match was kind of nice because, like, it kind of contained them. It kind of gave, you know, again, a psychology of, like, you're trying to hit the turnbuckle, but you're tethered to each other. I'm a little fearful of, like, these two guys are going to want this to be a solid blow off. They're going to want to do it justice. But there is such an expectations to fans of what Hell in a Cell has to be brutality wise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little fearful, and I guess more so for Punk. And I know if he heard me right now, he'd probably slap me that I'm basically like questioning his durability. But I'm just going to say, like, in the last couple of years, and this goes back into the AEW run with him, you know, he's gotten injured several times, and injuries happen, and the body is what the body is. So I'm fearful. Like, I don't want injury to happen to him. Of course, I want him to finish his feud and then the next great thing happen, whether it's him and Seth Rollins or him after a world title, whatever. I'm just fearful of, like, Hell in a Cell's no joke. They say it as a hype. They say it as a marketing line on commentary of, oh, this match takes years off the career. Well, maybe it doesn't take years, but it definitely actually takes legit time off your career. So I'm very excited for it, but I am a little bit nervous of, like, okay, what are they going to do to live up to the hype? But God, don't kill each other. Don't hurt each other.
Yeah. And there's like the trilogy of matches, right? Yeah. Like, they're continuing their story. But yeah. I think you're right, Justin. It's like, are fans' expectations higher than the follow through, than what they can put out there? Because again, how violent is it going to be?
We're going to need a needle.
Well, no, don't get me started on that. My hope, Emily, to volley off that point, here's my hope. Here's my fantasy booking, just to, you know, 2 hours removed from knowing that we're going to get it. My booking would be, let's introduce an element to it that will help us reduce the physicality but drive up the emotion. And what I would say is, mm-hmm. if this is the trilogy, have Punk have his wife sitting ringside. Or anybody else that's important to him sitting ringside, but obviously his wife's the most recognizable to the WWE audience. And you know, start the match, do the match. They get out of the cell. We've seen a million different creative ways they can get out of the cell, so that's not a huge thing to do. Get out of the cell somehow, and have Drew grab AJ, and somehow hold her up hostage somewhere in the cell. That to me then can create a whole other level of drama and real, but then can be a substitute for, oh, well, nobody has to fall off the top of the cell. Nobody has to fall through the cell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're going to need something big to finish it, because they already did the four go to sleeps in the strap match. So if they ended again with, oh, I hit multiple go to sleeps, it's not going to hit the same, as the kids say. But yeah, I don't think either of these guys want to be going through the top of the cell. I don't think we'll ever see anyone go through the top of the cell again at this point. So yeah, what do you do? But that's the fun of watching it, though. How are they going to do this? If I knew, then it wouldn't be as exciting. So yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great. I asked the question about the predictability, but of course, this is what I want to see. So let's go. We got some tag team matches. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire fail in their attempt to beat Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair. It looks like Damage Control is next in line. Also, Pure Fusion Collective did a triple tap out to Lyra Valkyria, Zelina Vega, and Natalya, which was a fun moment to have. Justin, with these matches here, of course, Natty getting a win in hometown, another good example of a legend being used in her hometown well. I'm confused with the tag team championships because it feels like they're trying to pivot to Damage Control as the next contenders, but this is a team that not only is wearing bandages, but just lost a match. Do you think this is where they're going, or am I missing something?
I don't know where they're going. I think the women's tag titles, you know, they're trying to create tag teams between, you know, Unholy Union and Pure Fusion Collective, and they're trying to create, but really I think just Bianca and Jade are just in a league of their own, and quite frankly, mm-hmm. everybody just wants to see them at some point, I think, go at it. So it's like you're just kind of buying time of like establishing this friendship and then waiting for it to disintegrate at some point, obviously, but probably WrestleMania, if not this year, then a future year. But that's a WrestleMania women's match. So yeah, the tag division for the women is just, it's just kind of there. I think they're trying, but it's just there. It's not, there's a lot to thank God that they have kept with one women's tag title and let them float between the two brands, because you could not sustain two women's tag titles.
Yeah, Emily, the Pure Fusion Collective, also, it seemed like they were supposed to be the big bad guys coming in, but it seems like they lose half the time they're in the ring. I like Natty getting a win in the hometown. I get that. Yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, this team does not seem as dangerous as they act like they're supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little confused by this tonight. I mean, I get, I was so excited to see Natty come out for that big hometown welcome. You know, obviously, I think she really had to take that win, right? I mean, I think it was a win for the fans to see her anyway. But then it was a big celebration. But I think Pure Fusion Collective is obviously this new faction, this new team. They're trying, they're refining. You can obviously see over the course of the last few weeks, they're really like honing in on that. But you're right, Jack, they have to figure out like, okay, are they going to be these intense, you know, intimidating, you know, athletes coming in and taking out every faction and every team on maybe Raw and maybe other brands too, eventually. But they have to establish it, and they're not going to if they can't dominate, you know, the Raw roster. Right. So they got to really like get some wins and show that they're intimidating and scary and that they're strong. I mean, they did a little bit in the beginning, and then now it's kind of petering off, and it's not quite clicking, I think.
And it's a tough formula to have. Obviously, WWE has no shortage of female talent in both. In both the main roster and NXT, but it's a tough formula to have, where, you know, there's some world title. There's the world title for the women, and you have Liv and Rhea, which is good stuff, and you know you have Nia and Stratton and what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But then when your tag title situation is essentially your next two biggest single stars together as baby faces. That's hard to generate anything that anybody cares about as opponents for them. Mm-hmm. That's just, I mean, and again, part of that is the embarrassment of riches of like, you know, again, you have Rhea, you have Liv, you have Stratton, you have Bayley, you have Nia. So you have this great, you know, set of women here for the singles. And then you have, you know, Jade and Bianca, who we all would definitely love to see go at it in a singles capacity as well for title. But when you're asking them to just be tag team, mm-hmm. and a babyface tag team at that, the crowd loves, you know, it's almost like you just kind of have to accept, well, we're just going to line up heels that they're just going to bulldoze over. But that doesn't do PFC any favors. That doesn't do Unholy Union any favors. So it's a weird rubber meets the road situation right now with the women.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jade and Bianca, this is like their second run as tag team champions. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, after the Bash in Berlin press conference, they were talking about, like it was all, it was addressed like and inferred that like they're going to be a really strong tag team, that that's what they're focusing on. But to your point, Justin, so many people are waiting to see them turn on each other, which shouldn't necessarily, just because you're a team doesn't necessarily mean you always turn on each other. But I know the fans also want to see singles runs from both of them. But I think Jade and Bianca together, I think, are what they need right now. They need each other. Jade definitely needs that support from Bianca. You can see them really connecting. But we have to see the trajectory and have opponents and have teams that can actually like face them. And if they're always going to be presented as baby faces and then have to, you know, have heels go against them and they just like, you know, bulldoze through them, where's that story? Like, where is that leading?
Well, and that's where the issue is too, is I think with the, you can have dominant a team like this, but you got to have someone that seems like they can stand up to them. And if Pure Fusion Collective seemed visually like a team that might have a chance, but again, they can't get past a thrown together team of Lyra, Zelina, and Natalya. How are they, if they can't beat them, how are they going to deal with Jade and Bianca? They're just going to get steamrolled. And so it feels a little bit like the Road Warriors in a smaller independent company. Like, who's going to beat these guys? They're going to kill everybody. Like,
so Jack, you say smaller independent company, and Emily just made a great, great point that everything she just said there. So to capitalize off what Emily said, I would float this idea. If you're committed to Jade and Bianca being together for a certain amount of time, and I think I even saw a clip recently, Jade was on a podcast or an interview where she even said, like, she acknowledged, like, fans want to see her versus Bianca on a big stage, but like she said, like, we need to make them care about us together right now for that to even matter later. That's a huge paraphrase by my point, but that was the gist of it. So to all of our points, what we're saying, I would entertain the idea, especially because there's like this working relationship with TNA, of having Jade and Bianca to get them more opponents. Let them do some TNA stuff. Let them do some NXT stuff so you have more opponents for them, just to solidify them as a team, taking on all comers from all companies, all brands. And then, of course, Bianca and Jade, you know, if you're trying to do good in your relationship with TNA, whatever this, none of us know the details of what that is, but whatever this working relationship is, if you're trying to do good, God, you send Jade and Bianca on a TNA pay-per-view, you can't tell me that's not going to be an increase on the pay-per-view for TNA there. So I would entertain that. And maybe, I don't know if that's in the works or not, but that's just, again, me kind of fantasy booking based off what Emily was saying, which is on point. Cause this, they will fight each other eventually, but you do need to solidify them as a team with real success, especially more so for Jade getting the reps of success before she's ready to be put in that single spotlight.
Yeah. Tutgraf says the Steiner Bros, that's who will beat the Road Warriors. Well, you need a Steiner Bros. That's the problem. But we wrap it up with the last thing here. Karrion Kross is having a chat with The Miz. And Xavier Woods is like, hey, is he trying to tell you that times are bad for you? And Miz is like, yeah, they are bad for me. I'm not doing good. Justin, are they dropping the New Day breaking up thing? It seems like they pivoted because of the news of people being let go.
Yeah. I mean, Odyssey Jones felt like he was a new recruit by one of them, not, you know, by Kofi, not loved by Xavier, and then Odyssey Jones doesn't seem like he's with the company anymore. So yeah, so I mean, they got to pivot. Look, they're celebrating the 10th anniversary, as they 10 year anniversary, as they noted, and to be a tag team or a trio, to be a group that never turns and never breaks up in 10 years in today's climate, when you have as much programming as you have, is just insane. So yeah, I guess you go back to what's worked. They always work.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a celebrity divorce, right? Like, yeah, it's like marriages in the celebrity realm, right? It's like, the fact that they've lasted 10 years is kind of incredible, that they haven't had any big breakups.
Yeah. So, I hope that I'm at a point, I don't want the New Day to break up now. I just want them to stay together as a team. I feel like it's kind of like John Cena turning. I don't want to see it now.
This whole segment, though, does kind of represent like kind of like a purgatory of, you know, I'm a Karrion Kross fan. I am. But the stuff with the, this has not gone off and worked. It just hasn't. I don't know if we're still snake bitten by when Cross was first called up to the main roster again under the Vince regime. And he's, I don't know if it's that, you know, the New Day obviously is, we said, has some start and stop with some stuff. Big E, of course, being injured, and maybe his career's over. I don't know. That sucks, but that's there too. Miz, fun little run there with him and R-Truth. That you knew that wasn't like a long-term thing. So this is kind of like a purgatory of like this talent that all is valuable and adds something, but they're kind of all lost right now. And they're kind of being put in a storyline that kind of reflects on, we're lost right now. Let's get on the right track.
But I do got to give WWE credit. This is where I think it's smart. They still put them on TV and remind us that they're still there. Remind us that they're still doing something, because when you're left off TV, that's when we all go, what happened to, I don't want to say people because then it gets into a big like crabby thing. What happened to Wardlow or what happened? Like, but when they're on TV, we go, okay, so at least they're still here. So I do think WWE is smart by keeping that, keeping them at least on TV.
They're not chasing the 24/7 title, thank God.
Right.
I'm sad I never won that. Jack knows I wanted to win that so badly.
Did you ever fight in Raw Underground?
No.
I almost did. No, I didn't.
Did you?
No.
You would.
You would have screwed up your hair.
Yeah, no. You would have messed up. Your hair would have been out of place and upset.
That's why I didn't do it. I walked in there. It was very warm in that room. And I was like,
uncomfortable.
I can't do this.
In an hour and 18 minutes, we've come full circle. come on.
There you go.
Well, I think that's a perfect time to kind of wrap it up. Everyone, let us know your thoughts in the chat. Before we go, Justin Labar, any final thoughts, and where can the world find you online?
I know it was a good Raw. It wasn't the best, but it was good. They're in a weird state. We still got a few weeks to the next PLE for Bad Blood. Obviously, a big transition is going to happen when they go cut down to 2 hours for Raw. So it was what it was, but WWE's moving in the right direction. It was an entertaining show to watch as we cover. Follow me at Justin Labar on socials here on Monday nights with the crew here. On Busted Open, usually Thursday morning, spar with Labar for about a half hour, have the entire 3 hours, which is insane. It's stupid, but it's awesome. Every Sunday, Busted Open 9 to noon. So if you want to hear more of me, there's no way to avoid me. I'm somewhere.
Always an entertaining show on Busted Open with Justin Labar. Check that out. Emily, thoughts, final thoughts, and where can the world find you?
Yeah, it was a great Raw. I'm excited to see what they do with the 2 hours. I think tonight's episode had a little bit of everything for everyone. So, and I loved covering it with both of you. You could follow me on all social platforms at Emily May Heller, and I'll post kind of where I'll be in the world so you can catch me there.
Danny correcting me. That's right. I used to say on a scale of 1 to 10, but now it's, was the show living under a rock or on fire right now? So let us know if you think it was living under a rock or if it was on fire right now. I thought this was an on fire show. I thought it was good. I will say, once I found out that it's going to go down to 2 hours, third hour felt extra long. Now that I know that we're getting it, 2 hour Raws, that third hour, it did start to feel a little bit long. But I thought it was a fun time.
Now, I was just going to say, it's gonna be wild come January. Flick over to USA at 8 o'clock and see what USA is playing from 8, 9 to 10.
Yeah, to 11. I'm curious.
It'll be Westminster Dog Show every week now.
The best.
Hey, that's
of
legit, Jack. That's legit. Don't knock it.
The best of any version of Law and Order they can find.
They've got a lot of those.
It's 25 seasons, so you're good.
They do.
But you can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. I'll be back on Wrestling Inc. on Wednesday to cover AEW Dynamite. So make sure to check that out and follow at Wrestling Inc. for all your latest wrestling news. That does it for this show. I'm hitting that end stream button. Boop.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-thru lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big.